Hey there, Star Wars Rebels fans! Welcome to another episode of the Star Wars Rebels After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight we are talking about Season 4, Episodes 1 through 4, Heroes of Mandalore, and In the Name of the Rebellion. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV super fan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Holy cow, guys!
What even were these?
We're back!
Woo!
It's been too long since we have gotten together to chat about Star Wars.
Star Wars!
And then an extra week because the Empire interrupted our transmission last week. They built this array that we didn't know about?
Those monsters.
Giant kyber crystals, what?
It's okay, someone blew it up, so we're fine.
Alright, well, let's not waste any time. Hey guys, welcome to the Star Wars Rebels After Show on AfterBuzz TV. We are covering the first 4 sets of episodes in The Heroes of Mandalore and In the Name of the Rebellion. Let me go ahead and introduce my fantastic panel to my left, Katie Cullen.
Hi, all my buddies. You can follow me all over the internet at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T.
To her left, Joelle Monique.
Hey, guys. I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique and every week at blackgirlnerds.com.
And I am Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. We've got the hashtag ABTVRebels, and Katie's got you guys covered on the live chat, so if you guys want to participate in the conversation, that's where you can go. Also, sadly, Emma Fife cannot join us this season. Scheduling has gotten really, really crazy.
She's on her own mission.
Yeah, yes. She's on a solo mission, much like Sabine went off at the end of last season to go take care of Mandalore stuff. Emma Fife is on her own solo mission right now, so be sure to follow her at Emma Fife. That is her name. Guys, we have a lot to talk about and
so
not a ton of time.
Things.
Oh my gosh. Initial thoughts on these first 4 episodes, because as we all know, this is the final season. Mm. They're not messing around anymore.
Way to start off, like gangbusters, big, giant stuff. And everyone grew up a little, and I was really excited to see that.
I honestly thought the 4th episode in this set was the best one in the entire set.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
You better than both sets of the episodes on Mandalore where people got freaking vaporized on camera?
Yes, I think so.
I enjoyed both of these. And granted, I did watch them immediately back to back. They were 2 complete stories. And because they were both 40 minutes long, there was a certain gravitas to them. And again, knowing that this is the final season, you know they're not messing around. Let's start with The Heroes of Mandalore. Because obviously, as we pointed out, at the end of last season, Sabine was very much taking care of family affairs. And we kind of start off that way here with this rescue mission to go and save her father. I wasn't expecting her father to be, like, the artist of the family. I was expecting him to be just as much of a warrior as her mom. No, that's not the case at all.
I like that he gives the mom credit for being the real artist,
though. You know that's how they met. She blew something up, and he kind of went, oh, my God.
You are my muse.
But it was great to see that Sabine had family who understood her, I think, was the pinnacle of that moment. It was just like, oh my God, like, Dad loves you, and he's so proud of you.
Aww.
And there's not, like, she had so much hostility in meeting her mother and brother, understandably so. But for him to just kind of embrace her and be like, your art is really improving, and I see where your inspiration comes from, and to see that banter, I was like, oh, this is how the family works together.
And also not to mention that he was like, but you're getting there.
You're close.
Like, like immediate critique. I'm like, yep, nope, I'm in.
And you can definitely tell she was like, excuse you, my work with light is masterful. Thank you very much. And he's like, debatable.
Could use some work.
But yeah, insanely supportive. I love seeing her family come together in this episode. And it gives a lot of context to who Sabine was when she went off to the academy. Now, in addition to being introduced to Sabine's father, we are also introduced to the weapon that she made for the Empire. And I'm not going
to
waste any time saying it, when you see the ashen remains of Mandalorian soldiers, knowing this is the final season, I was like, oh my God. They did. They actually did it. They killed her mom and then her brother. Holy
cow. And watching that armor crumble into dust at the touch is like, okay, all right. Hey!
I live tweeted that moment. I had to pour an entire 40 out for her. I was like, what? How? We just got here? And I love her so much. I was very relieved that the very next...
And then 5 minutes later, it's right. Like, I poured out an entire 40! And you're still here!
I could have drank that!
I'm gonna need to drink that.
You need to speak up sooner, man.
Now, I feel like these two episodes... There was too much story to put into one 24-minute episode, but there wasn't enough story to extend into a 48-minute episode. I feel like it was fun to watch the extended action scenes, but I feel like it was a little light on plot for how long it went. Especially in light of the next duo of episodes that we have.
I disagree. I thought the action sequences were very well done, and I thought the comedic elements of those fight scenes as well, in terms of, like, Ezra still not having full mastery of a jetpack. I thought those were appropriate, oddly enough. You know, there were a lot of times where early in this series, I would kind of roll my eyes and be like, oh, you know, they're doing the kids show thing. But, like... Nah, the comedy was, you know, well-timed, and it made their dramatic moments at the halfway through a lot more pronounced, in my opinion.
Well, and I won't jump the shark on how the first set of episodes ends, but I think that the fights that we did see built really well into that exchange of power. Seeing Sabine on the field taking charge was like, my whole heart was full. I'm like, look at this, like, young Ahsoka-esque woman on the, like, battlefield leading the charge. Like, that was one of my favorite things about Clone Wars, was seeing Ahsoka, like, in the lead, like, leading full-grown men.
Yeah.
But she was in charge. So seeing Sabine get to do it was, like, thrilling and exciting. And it made, when she decides to hand the sword over, so much more powerful.
Yeah. I'm not
saying any of it was inappropriate. I'm saying I don't think we had as much story in these two episodes as we did in the next two episodes.
Well, again, I feel that's debatable, and we'll talk about that when we get to another character being reintroduced from Clone Wars. But before we do that, I did want to say that, like, I will never complain about getting an extended fight scene where jetpacks are a main component, especially when there's a chase element to it. I will never complain about an action sequence like that.
It was like a nail-biting experience. I cannot say enough how much I enjoyed the first part of these episodes, because just Sabine, sword, jetpacks.
Oh my gosh.
Perfection.
Wielding the Darksaber, it's so cool.
I can't get over how good the Darksaber looks.
Oh my god.
It looks amazing. And a total aside, the lighting in this episode was so good. A lot of really good stuff. But I also took kind of piggyback off of Sabine in terms of how much of a leader she's become. I love seeing the way her relationship has developed with Fenn Rau. I mean, like, he full-on respects her as a commander. And it's so funny, because to have that mutual respect there, when in fact she doesn't view herself as the rightful leader of Mandalore, when we get introduced or reintroduced to the lovely Katee Sackhoff, aka Bo-Katan from Clone Wars.
Oh my god, guys, how, what? When Bo walked out, I was like, oh, snap! My whole heart.
Yes, I'm sure that's exactly what you said.
Yeah, I was vulgar, but I'm cleaning it up for this show. It was amazing.
That was the joke.
I'm gonna have to look at your Twitter to see, because I avoided it because I didn't get to watch at the same time as you, so I avoided it. But I'm gonna have to go back and, like, recheck your reaction.
It was such a beautiful moment, because, like, Bo was kind of one of those characters that could easily, people could be like, to the wind, like, we don't need to revisit her. But she's such a key component of people who are not here anymore, of a goal that was trying to be accomplished and couldn't get done in Clone Wars. So to see her come back, I was like, oh, things are about to go down. And then when we see her talking about Sabine as a leader in the field, oh boy, guys. We never get to see powerful women talking about other powerful women being good. Like, no competition, no desire to usurp, no critique,
no
even,
envy
really.
Or cattiness.
No, just she's good. And
Well, and not to mention that there's such a heavy weight on her shoulders because of, you know, obviously the history that Bo-Katan has with the Darksaber and the role that she played in, you know, the coup that that deposed her sister from power, and then ultimately her failure to save her sister's life.
Did you guys think she was a hypocrite when she was getting on Sabine about calling the weapon the Duchess?
I thought that was hilarious.
I mean,
I don't think it was hypocritical of her. I think it was this moment of, what? Excuse you, that is my sister's legacy. You what? And I just love the, look, it was a cascade of really bad decisions.
Definitely. Like,
the dumb stuff you do in high school.
Yeah.
Most of us can bury it because for us, that was when we were first really getting on the internet.
I'm pretty sure none of us.
Not immortalized.
I'm pretty sure none of us made weapons of mass destruction when we were in high school.
That's very true. Well, you didn't, but
just weapons of like personal mass destruction, just the destruction of self,
just internal mass destruction. All of my insides. But no, the to call it was a terribly callous thing for a young Sabine to do. The Duchess was a pacifist. That, and this again on a wide scale, could literally wipe out everybody who happens to be wearing armor at the time on Mandalore.
Which is exactly what she didn't want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez.
My God, what a mess. But
if you're loyal to the Empire, and if you're going to do the thing, and hey, they probably thought that the weapon was just great. Like, this is a great theoretical exercise. Mm. I built it. Theoretically, it would work. What do you mean you're going to use it?
Oh.
I was just using my brain for the smart things. What are you doing? Practical, why? I do like that they addressed and got into the idea of, like, well, why not just change your armor? Because immediately I'm like, look, guys, I know that this is, like, how we identify you, but take it off. Like, you're going to die. I really like that they were like, look, no, culturally, this is who we are. This is in our blood. We are not changing it. And we have to figure out how to move forward with this armor on.
If you want an impossible mission, try convincing a Mandalorian to do something they don't want to do. that goes against years and years of tradition.
Tradition.
Not to make it political, but like talking about the way Saxon refers to the usage of this weapon of like, oh, if you're loyal to the Empire, there's no need to use it against you.
Wrong.
Saxon. I hate Saxon so much.
God bless him. He's stupid.
He's so dumb.
So disgustingly similar to, well, why do you have a problem with it if you have nothing to hide?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, yeah. In terms of real world parallels.
And just straight up go, like, oh no, if we're loyal, they won't use it against us. And I'm like, oh, buddy.
You
really don't understand how any of this works.
You don't know how the Empire works.
When we get a chance to revisit Saxon, I'm looking forward to whoever his like henchman was. Like, we never get to see a face.
The captain. Sure, he's not dead.
The captain ran out.
He was on the ship when that thing blew sky.
That's also possible.
We saw him run out of the room.
No, Saxon.
No, I thought she was talking.
No,
about
I was
the
talking
captain.
About the captain, the person who was like, sir. Maybe we don't do this.
Hey, this is cool.
Do we have a guarantee that they're not going to use it again? Oh, I'm in pain. Oh, this is bad.
He might have just been there to provide a devil's advocate, so to speak, for
a voice of reason.
A voice of reason in terms of how other Mandalorians are seeing the situation. Besides Saxon, because, you know, Mandalore has been at war with itself for ages at this point. And to have, you know, Saxon on the side of the Empire, it shows that not all Mandalorians are, like, completely on board with, like, joining up with the Empire. For the most part, Mandalore are like, no,
Can't we just fight each other without bringing those guys into it?
They
are perfectly
to do
happy fighting each other.
We just want to keep killing each other, guys. It's
we
like
get involved in the stormtrooper.
It's like
thing.
Scotland.
Messy.
It's like we've got all this clan warfare. We don't need the English coming in. That's ridiculous.
Like, why'd you get them involved? We were perfectly happy. Now we have to go crazy all over them. And this is what happens when you get Scottish people
also,
angry.
We're just killing Mandalorians at this point, which is a little redundant if what you want eventually is a unified Mandalore.
Mm-hmm.
But a unified Mandalore under him. Which would also then be under the Empire, which means really it's under the Empire because boy howdy are you disposable.
Yeah.
There's like 3-4 people in the Empire who aren't disposable, and everyone else is just like, eh.
Yeah, and Saxon's like, you can definitely tell he's drank the Kool-Aid and has completely deluded himself.
God.
It reminded me a lot of, like, Littlefinger, of, like, he would burn the kingdom to the ground if he could be king of the ashes.
Yeah, totally.
Ugh, that's totally what it was.
I feel like it's as long as I don't get burned in the process. Like, it won't burn me.
Special.
I did love
Capital S special.
Sabine completely flipping, you know, the tables on the, well, it, couldn't you just attune it to attack Stormtrooper armor? And she's like, no, we can't do that. And even right before it ends up happening that way, again, really, really good foreshadowing. But even before it happens, she's like, I'm begging you, please don't do this. It. And he goes, yep. And it's like, ah, that's your villainous yourself. Hubris. That is your villainous hubris at work.
I think the best bit of just the detail from that I really liked was Ezra ripping his helmet off when it started to arc through that. Like, oh, yeah, you are wearing the Stormtrooper helmet. Ooh. Just one of those, oh, moments.
Season 4 callback or season 1 callback.
Great attention to detail.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's probably this season in a nutshell is going to be season 1 callbacks, attention to detail.
And murder!
And OMG, they are not pulling their punches.
We are crashing into Rogue One! It's so exciting.
Yeah.
We might not make it out the other side.
I mean, well, we know Hera will.
Yeah, we do. She gets to a certain point, at least.
She makes it to that fight. Again, we don't know who comes out the other side.
It's not clear yet.
Nope. But... To kind of bring it back to Bo-Katan, you know, when she and Sabine initially meet, Sabine very respectfully offers her the Darksaber because you can make a good argument for her being the rightful leader of Mandalore. And again, with this heavy weight on her conscience and her role in the previous power shifts and all other stuff that was going on Mandalore, she doesn't accept it, but she sees the potential in Sabine. And so in this moment, when Saxon, as well as all the other stormtroopers, are being electrocuted by this weapon, you know, Bo-Katan of all people is the one that goes, you know, this isn't right. You know, this isn't the honorable way. What we need to do is blow up this ship and that and have them all get killed that way.
That's we can honorable. Murder everyone in a giant explosion and it'll be just fine.
But we're not going to torture them to death, okay? We want quick incineration or nothing at all.
Yeah. Go big or go home.
But the episode...
We're artists.
The episode ends with Bo-Katan accepting the Darksaber...
Did you cry? Because I legitimately cried. It's just, you guys know how much I love Clone Wars. Like, I've watched that show so many times. And the idea that she gets to fulfill the dream of her sister of being unified. And it's not so much her taking or accepting the sword, but it's all the families being like, I'm behind you. I was like, oh, God. Oh, yes, and it's happening by Mandalore. Like, it's happening, and it's under her. And it's like, if only one could just be here and see it, like, it's happening.
Heavy is the head that wears the crown.
True.
And because of what happened to her sister, you absolutely know that her sister is essentially going to be her conscience as a leader. She has a warrior spirit, but, like, her sister is going to be her conscience. It's just like, or the memory of her sister.
I just gotta say, such a great way to bring the story to. I don't even know if it's a close, if we'll see her again throughout the season. I'm sure we'll at least get one or two more episodes with her. But this feels so satisfactory. It was really wonderful.
And complete side note, but just looking at the other clans on Mandalore, because my big complaint when I was watching the Mandalorian episodes for Clone Wars was I was like, those look awfully white to be Mandalorians. The Mandalorians are looking awfully airy in there. I'm not on board with that. But to just looking at the different clans.
Well, and Saxon even had a neo-Nazi haircut.
He did! Oh my God!
He had the neo-Nazi do, and it's just like, all right.
Oh, I see what's happening here.
It was so great that front and center are women of color, men and women of color, just leading their leading the Mandalorian clans. That's what got me choked up. I'm like, look at that beautiful black woman standing in the front. That's
she
amazing.
She did look amazing.
We have a question from chat from Justin von Volkenberg. Does anyone else think the Empire has another backup of the Duchess?
I would absolutely count on it.
I would almost be disappointed if they didn't, unless they point out.
No fool.
Unless they point out, like, this is why we have to make a second Death Star, because remember what happened with the Duchess? We can't let that happen again.
See, on one hand, they made a big point of we're going to delete everything, we're going to destroy the prototype, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, the ship blew up with it on it. On the other hand, Thrawn.
Well, yeah.
Like, it's really hard not to be, like,
one, Thrawn. I'm sure he has a backup. And two, Sabine's still alive, so he would be like, well, I told you you needed to apprehend her anyway, and yet she's not here. Hmm. You should fix that.
It's also the sort of thing where, yeah, no, it's beautiful. It's the sort of thing where you introduce something like that, and then, oh, well, it's gone now. No, that was a season opening. This is the final season. Mm-hmm. That is Chekhov's murder machine.
Yeah, no, it's... Yeah.
It has destroyed the mantle and taken its place.
It's been so integral to Sabine's backstory and growth as a character and her relationship with her family and her planet that, no, I definitely think it's coming back. But
I'll be surprised if it doesn't.
We have another two episodes to get through real quick. So final thoughts on the Heroes of Mandalore.
Wonderful. Wonderful way to bring up last season into this season. Wonderful way to explore Sabine's development as a character. Great time to bring Bo back and wrap that story up from an entirely different series. Freaking crazy. And Ezra remains adorable and has become, we see Ezra become a team player, guys.
Yeah.
Which is the one thing I've complained about since the very beginning. Like, Ezra, why are you actively fighting against your team?
I am a little bit worried about the shipping fodder because I've never shipped him and Sabine, but like, you know what?
Please stop that. I don't like it.
You know, he's still a teenage boy. I get it. And it is the final season, so I understand.
Why would Sabine be interested? I feel like she'd be like, ew. Go
away. You're my little brother. Stop it.
It's totally fine for me for him to be into her because she's dope as hell. Like, everyone should love Sabine.
Who wouldn't be in love with her?
Cool. She's a cool chick, but I just feel like she should be like, I'm trying to like help run a planet
here. She and Gina Torres should just run off together.
Speaking of shipping fodder, they are really leaning hard into mom and dad, aren't they?
They are, and I'm okay with
it. I am in it. I ship it like Amazon at Christmas.
Yes. Absolutely. Waiting for since the beginning.
Yes.
Oh my god, they're so cute together. I like their whole conversation back and forth of like
an asset. Is that what you called us? And then the whole like just having that conversation in these later two episodes about that's not you talking, that's Saw talking.
Yes, mm-hmm. I don't need to and see the piloting you, to understand bit. You
and the piloting bit. That
just.
No, I'm in, I'm down, I'm sitting I here. Need it. What makes you think they haven't?
Bone so that I can't physically see it.
I was going to say, guys, still a kid's show.
This is a children's show. Can we not say bone on our after show? I'm taking
bone,
that.
No,
I'm taking that
see,
back. I'm sitting here just going kiss.
We can show horrifying electrical vaporize the body murder.
I'm with you, Katie.
But can't say bone.
Sex too much. Cut it out.
Well, I mean, I completely agree. I don't exactly want to see this. We don't need Matrix Revolution digression here.
Okay, that's
no,
enough.
Thank you.
That's but, enough. That is enough.
But I ship it.
I'm going to put you two in timeout for a moment. While we talk
you
about
say
iTunes.
That like I don't live here.
I'm going to put you two in timeout real quick while we talk about iTunes. Folks, thank you so much to everybody who's gone to iTunes to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you, and it is the best way to let our producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on, especially because this show has moved over to the AfterBuzz TV animation channel. So, guys, we really need your continued support, especially on iTunes. And that is, in fact, the best way to let them know. And so we got a new comment over the break. Love this podcast by X. Do not play X. Really miss this podcast for the final season. Love hearing their views on each episode and the chopper count. Yep. We love you too. Thank you so much. Guys, and if you leave a comment, you'll get a shout out on the show. So, ladies, have you learned your lesson?
No.
Bone.
Andrew Gibbons just wants to know if he can say bone in chat.
Yes, you can say whatever you want in chat within reason.
Okay, I'll be good now.
If you say it without reason, we ignore you.
You get, like I said, within reason. Anyway, you guys are.
You say that like I haven't banned people in chat before.
You guys are going to be the death of me. Anyway, moving on to In the Name of the Rebellion. As you pointed out, we are barreling straight into Rogue One. And we see that with the way that Saw Gerrera is portrayed in these two episodes. He was never, He was never super stable when he was initially introduced in Rebels. First of all, he grew a lot of hair. That got real...
That got real wild, but quick.
But not
as banged up in Rogue One, which makes me think we've got a big accident happening soon.
Yeah. Something's gonna go down.
We're totally gonna see that, aren't we?
Maybe.
One would hope.
Oh my god!
We might just hear about it. Who knows?
Also fair. But yeah, just the Frankenstein emergence from the darkness of that crazy breathing machine is.
Yeah, he's still capable of, like, running around right now, but yes, something's gonna give sooner or later. But he basically calls out Mon Mothma
What a beautiful scene.
On her leadership style.
And right
style.
Before, we were watching it together, and I'm like, what droid is that? We just lingered on a shot of this green and white droid. I've never seen them before. What droid is that? 30 seconds later, I'm Saw Gerrera talking from the sky. Oh, that droid.
I am giant Saw Gerrera head.
Remember who you are.
I definitely had that feel. I really like the way that they staged that scene, the way that he's kind of looming over all of her troops as well.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a power play.
It's such a personal moment.
If he wanted just to send a personal message to her, he could have just sent a personal message to her or had the droid go to her, like, in the main room. But no, that was absolutely a power play.
Projected in the middle of a field, potentially while two main characters are having an emotional moment, and big enough that I look like a weather front. I want this to be some Brendan Fraser mummy ripoff stuff here. I want my face in the sky.
I love that people were taking screen caps of this when it was presented in the season 4 trailer. And somebody just tweeted out, show me what you've got.
Rick and Morty references everywhere.
Thank you, Internet.
Where do you guys stand morally, though, on his positioning? Because I thought it was really interesting. If you're leading a rebellion, following the rules don't make a lot of sense. Like, I understand Mon Mothma is, she was part of the government before, and what she's trying to do is, again, unify. So you don't want to be the kind of person who is destroying whole planets, per se, because people will not be happy about that.
Spoiler alert for Rogue One. That's exactly what
Spoiler alert. Oh my god.
It's been out for almost a year.
I know.
But, like, spoiler alert for Rogue One, that's exactly what that crew does. Mm-hmm. They break the rules. They say, nuts to this, nuts to the council, we're going to do this, because if we don't, people are gonna die.
You know, that's such a good point, too, because it kind of makes Saw Gerrera's death, once again, the cartoons increasing the value of the movies. That makes Saw Gerrera's death twice as impactful, because he kind of gives up in Rogue One. Like, it's like, look, I'm not going anywhere. I'm done. This fight is over. We're not winning. I put everything I have on the line. I've done unscrupulous things to try to help us as a people, and nothing is working. And the idea that they took that spirit and said, you know what? Screw it. The fact that the child that he raised, essentially, is the one to do it, it's amazing.
But there's going against the rules, and there's...
There's breaking protocol. And then there's making war crimes.
Because if you look at Rogue One, that last mission, there was nobody there who wasn't a volunteer. They knew exactly where they were going. They knew exactly what they were doing.
And they knew they probably weren't going to make it out.
Yeah. There was nobody there who didn't want to be there.
So never tell me the odds.
Yeah, you're breaking protocol, but you also have a lot of people who are like, yeah, no, I get it. I know what we're doing. I understand the risks and the sacrifice, and I'm in anyway. Saw Gerrera...
It's the
you hit the point where you torture prisoners, and it's like, oh,
it's the difference between choosing to throw your life away for what you believe in and being completely callous about throwing away innocent lives, or as you said, torturing prisoners.
And we've kind of seen, like, you can see the rebellion, like, words. I'm having trouble with this tonight.
I mean, you see
the
rebellion
is looking to take out the Empire and then. Possibly, like, if things go well, maybe come into power. Maybe they'll be the next governing body. Maybe they'll help elect the next governing body, whatever. But when you come to power, you don't want to come to power soaked in the blood of the innocent. You don't want to have resorted to your enemy's tactics when your enemy is a despotic dictatorship in order to overthrow them. I don't give the third Hunger Games book very much, but I will give it this, in that it very much pointed out this person came to power by using their same tactics and wants to continue to use the same tactics as the people they just overthrew. No, this is a problem. Yep. And it's one of the few dystopian overthrow the evil government series, anything that I've seen that actually addresses how you fight as well as why you fight. and shows what happens when you go down the wrong path for that. So for this, and this is why I think that the fourth episode here is one of the strongest out of these four. We very much address the, okay, if you do it this way, you might get things done, but what's the cost? And we see that Saul was very much willing to give up the lives of all of these innocent people who did not want to be there, who'd been kidnapped by the Empire, in order to achieve a goal, in order to do his mission, to strike some damage, to do whatever. And there's all these poor people that are in the way, and he just doesn't care. Whereas taking care of them, helping them escape, promising to take them home, is what gets them to bring their skills to the rebellion. And those are valuable, valuable skills. Mm-hmm. By treating them like people, like sentient beings, instead of like roadblocks.
Or livestock.
Yeah, that's...
Or numbers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The,
That's how you do
this. This being the crux of the episode, it's kind of like looking into like a dark mirror of a potential future for Sabine and Ezra right now, because Hera comes in and she and Mon Mothma are very adamant about the way that they do things, and Hera and Ezra are feeling a lot of frustration because they joined this fight to help their people. And Saw, as you pointed out, is getting results. He got valuable intel by doing terrible things. By doing very terrible things. Mm-hmm. But, and so they're feeling this frustration of maybe we should do things his way. And
it's even gotten to Hera.
Yeah.
Which is
incredible.
But I mean, you hit a certain point, and she had just lost most of the team that she'd taken on a mission with bad intel that they couldn't have known. Everyone kind of hits that point where you want to throw something at the wall. We both spent 90 minutes in traffic today just trying to get home. You hit the point where you want to murder someone, despite knowing that everyone's in the same boat and it's not really anyone's fault.
Yeah, I needed like 5 minutes just to myself to when I got in. I was like,
and that's just being in traffic. That's an everyday thing. They're fighting a war,
yep.
And they just
daily.
Lost people. Yeah,
every single day.
I thought it was really incredible to watch Hera come in to this to the second set of episodes where she's almost crash landing. Mm-hmm. What a phenomenal way to show what a great pilot she is,
she's
and
amazing.
Also put her
I
in incredible
her.
Danger. But did anyone else think it was weird that Ezra and Kanan didn't jump out to like force slow her down? I was like, y'all are just gonna okay. All right,
I feel like they would have done it at the last second, if something was really going wrong. She's like, oh, smoking,
it.
And she's like flying in at a high velocity. Oh yeah, we've seen her
that.
Land
and
worse.
Just straight up, I've seen worse landings. It's fine. Like
yeah.
They, if it had been really horribly wrong, they would have stepped in. But as
also,
it is, if someone knows what they're doing, you don't mess with
that's
also,
true.
To be fair, Kanan can't really see how bad it is.
Kanan's got force vision.
Mean,
he can see all things.
He sense
knows
how bad it is.
He knows.
But yeah, that would have been fine. But yeah, there is this moral ambiguity there, and Ezra's not wrong. Ryder needs their support. Like, Lethal is counting on their support. And just having that one moment between him and Mon Mothma where, like, there's like, yeah, if we stop to help you, who's going to help all these guys?
Mm-hmm. You really have to bigger picture before you can take care of the specifics.
Yeah. But at
it's
the
like,
same time...
I'm going to take out all these little ants, never mind that there's a hole in my floor that they're coming from.
But at the same time, you zoom in, and Lethal is important. Like, there are lots of people there that are counting on the rebel forces that may or may not be coming.
And I love that it comes back around with Saul Guerrero saying, well, what would you do for your planet? And the realization of, oh, would I murder these people in front of me? Would I let them die in order to potentially save my home? And the answer is no.
What I like is that this is a question that's constantly coming up in Star Wars. It's Princess Leia from A New Hope. Mm-hmm. It's Anakin is constantly faced with this question of, like, whose lives hold value.
Anakin makes the wrong decision.
Does not make good choices. But I like that it kind of comes down to Sabine and Ezra as we see our two youths trying to figure it out. And Sabine is so kind of on the ball at the very beginning. She's like, no, I don't trust any of this. But I also like that we have a conflicted Jedi, because as you all know, Grey Jedi is like my favorite theory. I know they've said it's not happening in the movies. I can headcanon anything because my imagination is great and powerful.
That is how fandom survives.
Yeah, it's true. I will jump over the mistakes the writers made. No.
But you're like... talking to someone who enjoys characters created for Sonic 06. Let's be real. I'm real good at just, like, salvaging the nice little thing from the trash fire. And thankfully, most of this is wonderful with only a few little fires that need to be put out with headcanon.
You just have to slap it a little bit.
No.
There you go. Our garbage babies aside, you were saying...
Just that I like that it's come down between them, and I'm still not convinced Ezra doesn't go dark side, man. We're seeing him flirt with a lot of things that would not be considered the Jedi way.
I mean, like, I feel like he wouldn't have had the dynamic that he had with Darth Maul for basically two seasons if that wasn't the case.
Yep.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting, but at the same time, you can definitely see the continual... pull towards the light. So it'll be interesting to see what road he goes down, especially when he's constantly seeing these examples of what happens when you go down the wrong path.
And I like that we've really addressed that in these two episodes. We have these, well, why don't we do what Saw's doing? Well, he's getting results, and then you get to go on a field trip with the guy who looks like the cool, rebellious uncle, and then you realize that, oh, he's got a lot of blood on his hands and not all of it needed to be there.
Yeah.
It's one thing to be like, well, this is why we do it and, you know, this is the hows and this is the whys. And it's another for the two of them who are the most likely to be swayed by Saul's charisma.
Yeah, they're
to be in the middle of that situation and go, oh, okay, like have to actually make those decisions.
Yeah,
it's so much more powerful than here's the hows and here's the whys.
Yeah, no, this is a point where should they live to a ripe old age, they would probably look back on that day and was like, I didn't realize it at the time, but I was at a crossroads.
This is
and
a defining I think
I
moment.
Yeah, and I think I made the right decision.
And Kara had good reason to be worried about them. For I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about the guy they're with.
For realsies, talking about that, Saw is dangerously close to something big, and I feel like we all know what that something is.
A rendezvous point. Large weapon.
That means that's powered by giant kyber crystals.
What could it be?
I don't know. What could it possibly
be? I've never seen a Star Wars movie before. Well, I don't know.
It sure wasn't that Star Destroyer in the middle of empty space. It's gotta be there. It's gotta be there. It has to be here. Honey, you need to breathe and learn to deal with disappointment.
I knew they weren't going to show the Death Star, but I was wondering how close they were actually going to get. Mm. And I feel like they got pretty dang close.
He was on to it. That's the interesting thing about Saw Gerrera, because as much as he makes bloody decisions, I will say, the man does get results, and you have to wonder, like... Not that it would be a good outcome, but just, like, if they had pushed in Saw's direction a little more, how much more could they have accomplished? Again, not that it would have been the right decision. Nah. I'm just vastly intrigued by how close he's getting, like, almost single-handedly.
But the more you use the Empire's tactics, the more you become the Empire.
This is true.
And that's, again, okay, so the rebels win the war, great. Then you have all these people who were run a roughshod over by them saying, I don't trust these guys either. So we're avoiding that. It's Saul Guerrera doing this as opposed to all of the rebellion doing this.
Yeah. So, yeah. Saul Guerrera, something terrible is going to happen to you before the season's out. And
Justin in chat says, Saw is Captain Ahab looking for the white whale.
That white whale is the Death Star.
It's true. Yeah.
What's funny? Yeah, I mean, there is a whale out there. He's not wrong. He's just obsessed.
But we know he's never going to find it, and I just want to know what happened to his body.
It is interesting, though, that the thing that he's looking for right now is the thing that ultimately kills him.
The thing that lands in his lap, too. Oh, like, gosh. If he had just... Again, if he had gone with more of, you know, the rebels... more peaceful and contemplative actions, he might have been able to be like, oh, no, that's a kid, that pilot's good, there are the plans, and he could have solved everything.
So like, different.
It all came to him, probably because they knew he was close, and the one that was closest to it. Like, of course we go to Saw Gerrera. Saw Gerrera's already gotten so close to the ship, he'll know how to close this deal, but the man was so warped by the time that they get there. Man, this show makes everything better.
Oh, it's so good! I was gonna say, Star Wars is amazing, you guys!
Star Wars is amazing.
Rogue One is so good!
It's my favorite Star Wars movie. happening.
Star Wars Rebels is so good.
Andrew Gibbons in chat brings up the scientist mentioned Jeddah.
Yeah, there, they did.
And that's the thing.
He's a fun little...
But he's so ready to sacrifice the people when the people have some of the missing information. Mm-hmm. Okay, what's on Jeddah? Why were they bringing them there? Oh, it's like, gosh. Doesn't matter. They're not as important as this big thing that we have to... It goes back to that big picture situation.
He's so focused on, like, gotta find the weapon that he completely forgets. Like, there's a lot of components that go into not just making this weapon, but where that weapon gets deployed and who knows how to use it.
Yeah.
You need all the little bits and pieces.
They even mention Krennic in this episode. Like, ugh, it's so good, guys.
Information.
Our show time is coming to a close. I loved these episodes. I did want to give a really quick shout out to the satellite dish battle.
Shout outs.
Because, oh my god, as we're watching it.
It was fun,
and it's not plot-wise, it's not huge to the episode, it's just where they happen to be when they needed rescue. But I really loved this battle, because as they're sliding back and forth, as the dish is realigning, I literally said out loud, I was like, this is a really creative setting for a battle! Good job, show! Good job! I enjoyed it!
And I love that we do still see Ezra making bad decisions, but it's not like, the whole episode is Ezra making bad decisions! We have moved beyond that, but it's okay, no, I can improv! It's General Bob Smith! Is this a joke? I'm Bob Smith.
That's just our luck chopper.
It's one of those things where it's not like he was at the beginning of season 3, where it was infuriating with the decisions he was making because it was coming from a place of abandonment. This is him coming from a place of frustration, but it's understandable frustration. Mm-hmm. Even at the beginning of season 3, it was understandable.
And it plays into the team. Yes. That's my problem before, is he was always just so headstrong. I'm like, you are going to get everyone you love hurt or killed, and this is dangerous, and you need to slow down. Whereas now his decision, it's not even a bad decision. It's just like a quick call, like, oh, well, that guy's a real person, and maybe I can do an imitation of his voice. Crap, that's you. That's just not going to work anymore.
Oops. All the ships and all the planets, you had to show up in mine.
These are forgivable, understandable mistakes. It's fast thinking. I love this version of Ezra. I love that he is just Aladdin in space.
I feel kind of bad for the stormtroopers, not going to lie. They're like, all right, we're doing our job. And then here's these giant explosives from Saul Guerrera. Short fuse right in front of their face. Oh, I'm going to die today.
I definitely feel more bad for stormtroopers lately now that, you know, Finn was one of you. Just like, oh, no.
Now that they've been humanized a little bit.
I'm going to die today. Oh, boy.
Honestly, I feel bad for stormtroopers whenever you hear the water cooler talk. And they're just like, oh, yes, did you hear about this thing? Yeah, but I don't know how I feel about it, man.
I just keep thinking about home. I just keep thinking about episode 7. And I know the First Order is different from stormtroopers. Whatever, where they walk into Kylo Ren just making a scene, turn around and walk out. Like, they're people too.
Knowing that beneath that helmet lies Daniel Craig. Yes, yes, they're humanized.
I love Star Wars.
007.
Star Wars so much.
Yep.
So yes, that I pretty much covers it as far as the episode go. Final thoughts on In the Name of the Rebellion before we move into predictions.
So ridiculously good. I'd say it's one of the best episodes of Rebels in a while, and I'd say the second part is definitely the best we've had this season so far.
This is why war stories in children's media. It's a weird thing to say, but war stories in children's media can be really good.
Mm. They're important.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the comparison to Prime, war stories where, you know, a young demographic is key means that you have to step up your game in terms of storytelling, and we see Rebels doing that.
Well, and we see the idea that, war isn't always about blood and guns and violence. Like, sometimes it's literally just your decision-making and, you know, working with the people that are around you. I like the way that they explore thought process and making choices, especially through Sabine and Ezra.
Themes, yeah. Oh, yeah. Gosh, this show is so good.
Strategy is important. Information is important. Ethics and morals are important.
Saving one planet versus saving numerous planets, and even if that's your planet. And I feel like that's going to keep coming back around for Ezra this season.
Absolutely.
So guys, let's go ahead and do some real quick rapid fire predictions.
After Buzz TV predictions.
Now, sadly, I did not see the preview for next week.
Neither did I.
Okay, so we're going in blind here.
Great. None of us
know. And we don't have a Kanan to guide us.
How long until another Sith user comes back, and how long until Thrawn comes back?
No more than four episodes.
I was going to say 3 episodes for the former and 35 seconds for the latter.
Yeah, Thrawn is
cold open. Thrawn's the next episode. I don't know.
Thrawn's got to be close behind. Like, he's been doing too much tea sipping, watching, observing. Like, it's time for him to get in there and get a little bloody.
Did anybody else notice that I believe it was Jennifer Hale's voice was as a commander at one point? Like,
her character
didn't show up, but I was like, I swear that's Jennifer Hale. Maybe I'm...
I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe I'm mishearing that, but I could swear I hear Fem Shep working for the Empire. Renegade for life, yo!
Yes.
Also, more Kanan.
More Kanan. More Kanan.
More Kallus.
Oh, God, we didn't even talk about it, guys! Kallus is so hot!
Okay. I believe we summarized, we were having a discussion about this the other night. We had a, this is our summary of our predictions regarding Kallus. He's probably going to kind of show up in ancillary roles until it's his time to throw himself off a bridge.
To throw himself off that space bridge. Oh, love the haircut. Love the haircut. Love everything about it. Although I do miss the ponytail because, again, it was very Javert. But I dig the new look. Dig it. Okay. Let's wrap it up.
Hashtag hot Kallus.
Hashtag hot Kallus for the win.
Hashtag bone.
Yes,
dear Lord.
I will love you, these hashtag bone fans.
All right, Joelle, where can the people find you?
Hey, guys, I've been Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique and every week at blackgirlnerds.com.
I'm Katie Cullen. You can follow me all over the social medias and on Twitch and YouTube at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. All of my shows are back. Most of them are animated, and most of them are at 7 p.m. Pacific, because that is life. I tweet about those. Follow me on the Twitters to see all that.
Again, you can follow Emma Fife at her name, Emma Fife. Be sure to send her your well wishes, because we're going to miss her on this show. I'm Megan. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. Let's never cover 4 episodes again.
Ever!
I'm on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz, and I write articles for The Movie Chick. I do the voice of Margot Lane for The Shadow Recreation. Lots of stuff. Anyway, thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you all next week.
Bye!
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
May the Force be with you.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.